Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Opinion Line on Cork's 96 FM.
Professor Fanning, can you just tell us, what do you think normal life is going to look like when we have that percentage of the population vaccinated?
I suppose the first thing to kind of unpick really is 80% of adults still means that there's an awful lot of the population unvaccinated. you know, those individuals under 16. That, as we've seen already, there's been considerable debate on the indoor dining as to whether to allow unvaccinated under 18-year-olds. And that's only kind of the, I suppose, the tip of the iceberg with regard to the discussion on what society will be like when we have a large percentage of the adult population, because we'll have so many of the population unvaccinated. So we'll still be dealing with concerns around COVID-19 infection. And I suppose one of the discussions that will come out is the vaccination of individuals under 16 years of age. That's something that will be a feature of the next couple of weeks, definitely. And the EMA has approved both mRNA vaccines for 12 to 15-year-olds. So we'll be approaching the new school year and the new academic year for the universities. So I suppose the first impact will be as to whether we have the 12 to 15-year-olds on a vaccination schedule at that stage. If we do, and as soon as they're all vaccinated, you know, we have largely protected the entire secondary school population and above, because the university students will have had an opportunity to receive a vaccine as well. And those individuals who work between 16 and 30 will all be vaccinated as well. So from a work perspective, you know, there'll be very big changes in the immunity of our workforce. We'll be largely protected as a workforce from the serious consequences of COVID-19. So that leads to, you know, kind of more capacity to have an adult-only socialising event where everybody is likely to be vaccinated.
So do you think a lot of people might be able to return to their office from like September, October onwards?
Oh, I do. Yes, absolutely. You know, the opportunities for anyone to receive a vaccine have, you know, excelled over the last couple of months and exceeded. We haven't quite reached our 80% of adults vaccinated in June. That was obviously shifted to 80% of adults vaccinated by the end of August. And that, you know, that includes a very large majority of individuals who are within the workforce. And yes, they should be able to return to the office. Now, it will lead to some, I'd say, some interesting discussions about who declares whether they've been vaccinated or not, because, you know, work protocols will have to take account of health and safety and GDPR. And we will have a very, I think, interesting discussion as to whether GDPR trumps health and safety with respect to a colleague's right to know whether individuals are or are not vaccinated. Because we've seen, you know, several points made by world leaders that, you know, the unvaccinated represent a kind of a reservoir for this infection to largely kind of stay within the population as an endemic disease. And the same applies at work as to whether, you know, work colleagues and employers will have the capacity to know whether somebody is vaccinated or not, unvaccinated. Clearly, if everybody's vaccinated in the work environment, you have a different risk profile if you're dealing with that compared to a mixed vaccinated population. And those individuals who are unvaccinated would clearly represent a greater risk than to others than those that are vaccinated. You know, we'll have this. So this is, that's one thing that is going to come sharply into focus when we come back, both from an academic school perspective and from a workforce perspective. And I suppose creches as well, and anything that where individuals are engaging with other individuals. This dichotomy between some people wanting to declare they're vaccinated and some just not saying. And in the you know, I suppose if somebody is not saying that they're vaccinated, it might be prudent from a health and safety perspective to presume, rightly or wrongly, that they are unvaccinated. You know, I mean, this is health, private health information. Individuals, you know, keep this very close to their chest and don't often share their health details with friends, colleagues, never mind employers. So I think it's going to be a feature of life coming on. I imagine that, or at least I hope, there are discussions in all the workforces around the country as to what's going to be the lie of the land with respect to having a mixed vaccinated or unvaccinated population. That's one aspect of it.
And Professor Fanning, what about mask wearing? Do you think that will become optional in time?
I do.
And when do you think that will be?
Oh, so this is at the outset of our discussion, you mentioned 80% of the adult population vaccinated. We will need to start turning this conversation around to what percentage of the total population are vaccinated. And the reason for that is that in order to kind of have our nation as protected from an immunological perspective as much as possible, we need as many individuals within our nation vaccinated. And that means, you know, the 12 to 15 year olds, and we need to have a very good public health education message as to the values for parents and guardians to make a decision as to the 5 to 11 year olds then. And have that, you know, have an informed discussion as to why it's of value, and to fully understand that these modern medicines, on rare occasions, can have complications. But so too can picking up COVID-19, even in children who, and you know, you'll have heard from myself and colleagues that, you know, most individuals who are in that age category, we'll say 5 to 16, can largely handle this infection with very little complications, but there are the few individuals, and there are some children who are vulnerable, who have other conditions. You know, they may have leukemias or cancers, or they may have some other condition that makes them vulnerable to picking up infections. You know, so you know, no group is a clear kind of single entity. You know, you'll have individuals, as I said, who are sicker than others, who are fitter than others, and then you'll have the individuals who get this infection, and it's a complete surprise that it has, you know, consequences for them for their ongoing health. So we have a very interesting few months from an immunological and a virological perspective coming up, but definitely discussions around childhood vaccination against COVID-19 need to be front and centre and need to be happening fairly soon. I know there's so many fronts going on the vaccination front. We have the booster discussion coming up soon. That's another thing that's going to be a feature of the next couple of months as well. Because remember, some individuals were vaccinated at the very end of December and January. And by the time we come to September, they'll be, you know, heading to 9 months post-vaccination. And, you know, because vaccines are a new medicine, in our fight against COVID-19, we haven't got the clearest of understanding as to how long immunity lasts. You know, it is unlikely to disappear and to be totally ineffective. And this is where the discussion around boosters becomes a feature of our, we'll say, national life for the next couple of weeks and months. And I think we will see boosters coming on stream sometime soon. It's up to NIAC to make that decision as to when that will actually happen. But that's another discussion for workforces as well.
Yeah.
You know, who goes for them and when they go for them, and you know, that'll happen over the next couple of months. So that won't be an immediate thing. I imagine it'll be a rolling. So if you are vaccinated in January, we'll say you might get your booster in September, and then they'll roll kind of, you know, February into October and so on, that kind of way.
And Professor Fanning, what does herd immunity look like? It's not just a simple number like 90% of the population, is it?
No, it's not. No. It has been, you know, it is a term used in immunology, and it is a term correctly used when you have a proportion of a population, which would basically prevent an infected individual passing it on to another susceptible individual. Mm. So what you end up having is this buffer of less susceptible or immune individuals around an infected individual. And if you like, the virus can't jump into another zone where there's another uninfected individuals. So we have these barriers. Now, as we know, people who are vaccinated can pick up COVID-19 again. And we've seen with the mRNA vaccines that that's probably, you know, 90% are protected against getting reinfected. And with the AstraZeneca and the J&J, it's in around the 60-65% are protected against reinfection. So, you know, we have this, we'll have this herd immunity will kick in that it will, when we reach whatever figure, that magical figure that is, because remember also, we have a group of individuals who are immune as a result of infection. So, you know, the numbers actually immune are probably a little bit larger than those that actually are quoted with regard to the immune as a result of double vaccination. And from a population perspective, we're certainly probably approaching 60-65% of the total population. You know, close to full immunity, because I think the latest figure is that we are north of 83 or 82% for having received one shot. So, you know, as a nation, we are very much doing the best we can to get towards this magical notion of herd immunity. We will, COVID-19 will stay what's called an endemic virus for a while. Mm. In other words, it'll be kind of, you know, it'll be there in the background amongst largely the unvaccinated individuals. And this is why it's so important we get as many of the adult population vaccinated as possible, and why we start moving to the 12 to 15-year-olds. And then they're only, you know, they'll be the mRNA vaccines they'll be getting. And then we have that discussion then with the 5 to 11-year-olds, because we're going to be coming into a flu season. Or we didn't have much of one last year, but the ordinary kind of head colds, you know, the kind of snotty noses and all that kind of thing as a result of running temperatures. And what you want to do for with childhood vaccination with COVID is to take that out of the picture, so that, you know, we don't have a cohort of individuals who are thinking that they are susceptible to the serious consequences of COVID-19 infection. So that's where the childhood vaccination against COVID-19 also comes into it. The language around, you know, the 5 to 11-year-olds is different to the 12 to 16-year-olds. You can bring 12 to 16-year-olds into the conversation with you. You know, they're nearly adults. You know what they say, and at 16, so you can sign for your own medical consent for most things. The 5 to 11-year-olds are totally under parental and guardianship control, or not control, but, you know, guidance and minding. So, that's why we need a very clear and early public health message as to the value, and to fully inform parents and guardians as to maybe the potential risks on a population-wide level for using these vaccines.
Yeah, because I suppose, like Professor Fanning, if a young person with, for example, cystic fibrosis is not really protected, then if they mix with young people who are all unvaccinated, really?
Yes, even if they are vaccinated, they're more at risk of being challenged by somebody who has virus and is shedding that virus. So, you know, we have largely kind of done exceptionally well with regard to our vaccinations. Now, I would have some alternative ideas about the way the age-related vaccination was rolled out. But nonetheless, we are where we are in the situation where, you know, anybody who's over 18 now and 16, I think, and 17-year-olds tomorrow, look, yes, to protect those most vulnerable, and they could be anybody, you don't even know necessarily that you're protecting them by being vaccinated, you know, because, not, as I said, not everybody declares their underlying health conditions. And that applies to children as well, you know, and creches, and, you know, they're all more protected the more vaccinated our population is. And that includes, you know, 5 to 11-year-olds. And at some point we'll have a discussion less than 5-year-olds, but we're not there yet.
Professor Liam Fanning, a listener has been in touch with us here on the Opinion Line on Cork's 96 FM, and this says, how can this be called a vaccine when you can still get the disease with it? Doesn't that fly in the face of everything we know about vaccines? This is just an experiment which may have a good outcome or may not, but I'm going to wait. What would you say to that person?
Okay, well, the first thing is it's each individual's free choice to take this vaccine or not. So that's the first thing.
Yeah.
You know, these vaccines are not compulsory. So that's the first thing. Everybody has a free choice, and everybody chooses to get their information from wherever portals they want, be it radio, television, the internet, whatever, you know, the European Medicines Agency or whatever. These vaccines have gone through very rigorous, you know, trials. I know they appear to have come out relatively quickly from the identification of COVID-19, but this is based on years and years of science. And these clinical trials that were done were done, you know, with very high degree of rigor. And, you know, the EMA, as an august agency for approving medicines on behalf of us, and then we nationally approve them secondarily, then have looked at all the data. And, you know, like with any medicine, there are risks. This is not a big experiment. The clinical trials deal with the experimental protocols and how much we're going to use of these vaccines. And then what is determined is, they are not used if they don't come up to a particular threshold. And each of the vaccines that are currently licensed in for use in Ireland have exceeded the expectations with respect to protection from hospital and protection from the consequences of serious consequences of infection. And that's key. So, individuals do get infected after vaccination, but the vaccines are not designed to give you what's called sterilizing immunity. In other words, you'll never get infected again. When you get infected again, if you're vaccinated, you're preloaded with immune molecules which protect you and help protect you. The evidence for that is individuals who are vaccinated are less likely to end up in hospital, are less likely to die. There's one very good piece of evidence on this in Texas. They looked at they had 9,000 COVID-19 deaths since February of this year. So in other words, since the start of vaccination. And every one of them, except for 43, were unvaccinated. In other words, 99.5% of the COVID-related deaths were in the unvaccinated individuals. Now, they have much larger numbers than we could ever hope. We don't want to achieve those numbers in Ireland. Mm. But that gives you the sense of the protection that these vaccines give vaccinated individuals, even though they may become reinfected. Even in the United Kingdom, where they had, they looked at their data and they looked at 25 children who died as a result or with COVID-19. And, half them had underlying serious conditions. So, these vaccines give wonderful protection against the serious consequences of infection, hospitalization and death. The EMA and our own NIAC and NEFID and the government would not be taking on board, the use of these medicines if the benefits didn't outweigh the risks.
Professor Liam Fanning, immunovirology at UCC, thank you very much for joining us on The Opinion Line on Cork's 96 FM.
Cork's 96 FM.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.